Yo, yo, yo. What is up, guys? Omelette Benobi here for Unapologetic Live. Taylor's here as well.
What's up?
What's up, guys? We're going to have a pretty simple show today. Not going to get super political. We want to do sort of like what we did last week. We got into the philosophical talks about our days, about our lives. And today we're asking the question, is our society overstimulated? You yourself may have hopped onto this podcast after scrolling through TikTok for like 3 hours or liking some Instagram baddie's photos on your social media. And I myself am a culprit of doing such things. So we're going to talk about that today. Taylor's going to talk about today. And hopefully you guys will have an inner look at yourself. We're going to be looking at the chat, seeing what you guys think about this and posing the question, is our society overstimulated? A big question to ask when we're constantly in this new modern digital age of a 24-hour news cycle where you guys are reading headlines all day long and trying to find the most outrageous story, which we do that here too. Constantly looking at social media, watching things on Netflix. Sometimes our attention spans are just so low that we can't even look at a video for more than 10 seconds. But I'm proud of you guys for hopping onto this podcast, listening to me for what? Almost 45 minutes to an hour. It's honestly a feat these days to do this. Back in the day, you know, let's say in Lincoln's age, what men used to do is put up their little tree stumps or hop on a stage out in public, and they would debate and talk about their musings and philosophical ideas for hours and hours and hours on end. And people would simply sit in the crowd and watch as people discuss these things. We are no longer in that time, as you can clearly see with your own eyes. We've moved far beyond that. Our view of debating is watching a 30-second video on TikTok and looking at the duets on it and seeing who rebuttals it in less than 60 seconds. And that's as far as we go, many of us, into our own ideas, our own minds, our own thoughts, and our own lifestyles. So today, we're going to be talking about overstimulation. We're going to be reacting to this video by Alex.com on YouTube called How Overstimulation is Ruining Your Life. And I have a feeling I'm going to get called out hella hard in this video for things that I do every single day. Here we go.
Did you know the modern world is robbing you of your focus? Being able to focus is critical if you want to complete any sort of task. No matter what kind of goals you set for yourself, you'll need focus if you want to go through with them. But who wants to focus on the mundane tasks when there's so much going on around us? And who can blame you when you're bombarded with notifications and clips every second of every day? If you struggle to get things done because you keep jumping between tabs and apps, it's because you're overstimulated. And if you don't do something about it, it'll only get much worse. Hey Aluxers, today we're talking about how overstimulation keeps you from realizing your potential, how companies take advantage of this, and what you can do to fix that. And stick around until the end of the video to learn a sobering fact about the effects of overstimulation. Let's go. Welcome to Alux.
Alux.
A life of stimuli. Stop us if you've heard this one before. You wake up in the morning and the first thing you do is grab your phone.
I already gotta stop him. I've heard that before. Not only have I heard it before, I did it this morning. Taylor, do you do that in the morning?
Guilty as charged.
Guilty
most mornings.
Charged, man. Yeah. I wake up in the morning and I roll over to my alarm clock. I like turn it off and then I'm like, oh, gotta see what's happening today. Gotta see what's trending today. Gotta see what possible things we can talk about on the show or how I can make a reel or how I can make a short or how I can put it on social media. And I'm sure you guys do that in your own way. I have the added cushion and the little safety blanket of being able to say it's my job, which is really an excuse for overstimulated behavior and continuing to do these things. And definitely something that I need to put a check on, but it's so amazing to me how quickly your mind can adapt to that sort of lifestyle. I didn't grow up with smartphones. I didn't grow up being attached to technology directly like we are now. I don't think I got a smartphone until I was in my early teens, like 13, 14. What about you, Taylor?
That's super late for you considering how young you are.
Yeah.
Like iPhones didn't exist when I was 15. I guess they were just coming out. But I had like the flip phones.
I did
back,
too.
Yeah, back when it was, I don't know, maybe when I was like 12, 13, I started getting my first one.
Yeah, I had like the little slide phone where, and I thought it was so cool. I had a double slide phone, y'all. I had the one that slid up and you had the numbers at the bottom and then you could slide it to the side and have the letters on the side.
Yeah, I had the sideways slide one. That was like, rocker or whatever.
Oh, this is so cool. And every other kid just had like the one slider and I was like, Mine does double. And that was cool back then. And of course, I would go on my phone and I would text people all the time. Like, I would constantly run out of those little text credits that you call, that you have. Are they called minutes when you're texting? I don't know.
No, I think they're just messages. You have a message count.
Yeah, I had like, yeah, you have your message credits that you can use or whatever. And I would constantly run out of those. And my mom would be like, "Why are you, who are you texting so much?" And it was probably just like one girl that I was close with.
Yeah, the family
school.
Plan with all your siblings, and someone hates too much data, and dad gets mad, and he's on the phone with the company saying, "I'm canceling the plan," right. All the stereotypical things.
And now we're in this day and age where, one, it's super cheap to just have a smartphone on you, and not only are you connected to yourself and all the content on the internet, but you're connected to everybody in your community and everybody globally. So imagine how much that expands your mind, but at the same time shrinks it down to this little attention span where you are just inundated with so much information you couldn't possibly keep up. But also your threshold for attention is just like so tiny. You have to just keep watching and keep watching and keep scrolling and keep scrolling. And it has amazed me to see my own self morph, but also the society around me. Because like, now I'm walking around at the airport and I see 2-year-old kids who have an iPad just thrust in front of them because they're being too loud or wanting to explore. And then they're just sitting there, head tilted all the way down, and just watching things on the internet. And what are those kids going to be when they grow up?
They're going to, I mean, if Gen Z already, what we see, gave us what we see on TikTok,
right.
Like, what the heck is going to come next?
What is next? And it's weird because for me, it seems like social media keeps shifting. Like, we're getting lower and lower and lower. Like, we had YouTube, which was longer form videos and people were watching them. And then we got to Instagram, which was videos and pictures. And they were, you know, semi-long videos. You could upload like 5-10 minutes or whatever. And then we got to TikTok, which is, you know, 60-second, 30-second videos, but then we're going back to expanding them. So now we're opening up to 90 seconds and 3 minutes and 10 minutes. So we're constantly in flux when it comes to this stuff.
Do you remember Vine was like 4 seconds or something?
Yes, 4 to 6 seconds basically was Vine. Amazing. And people would just go on their phone and I miss Vine. That's
I know,
horrifying.
I miss it too, sadly.
That's horrifying. And you would just scroll and scroll and scroll for hours and hours and hours. I remember doing that in middle school.
A lot of like huge YouTubers now and social media stars got their start on Vine.
Yep. And it's just attacking what is that low attention span and sparking something in it. And we'll get to more discussions about this. I don't want to rant too long as we're just 1 minute into this video. So let's keep watching.
Before you're even fully awake, your hand is reaching for that electronic rectangle that keeps you entertained. You scroll through your notifications, check out your new posts on Instagram, and just sit there on your bed for minutes, even hours for some people.
I feel attacked.
There's always a video or a picture or a funny meme to look at. Because you need your fix. You need that rush that comes with seeing something new or fun. But the more you do that, the harder it is to get that feeling. That's because we're addicted to stimulation, and we're not exaggerating that here. Let us explain how this works. While from a social perspective, humanity has evolved enormously, our brains actually haven't changed all that much, and that's part of the problem. You see, our brains produce a neurotransmitter chemical called dopamine, and you've probably heard of this before, right? It's what the brain releases to tell you that something is good for you, and it's part of our reward system.
I love, like, this is like a kindergarten class.
Yeah, can we just acknowledge that this lady's voice is kind of overstimulating? She's like, "You're being overstimulated."
Right, like, as the video is like constantly switching pictures and videos for things for you to see, and her voice is like, "Dopamine." Yeah, but yes, this is overstimulating. It's so funny. Like, they have to make this video and switch things up, and it can't just be a woman sitting in front of the screen talking to you, because that would be understimulating and you wouldn't watch anymore.
Which, yeah, case in point, that is why, like, you know, if you guys have seen Amala specials, which you should watch, we could put them out every month, and they're like so much information and so much perspective on these hard-hitting topics that is packed into a very short amount of time, and we have to make them that way, because just the way content is these days, if you just start leisurely talking about, well, here are the issues of race in America, it's like you're going to lose people. But you don't give people a second to like stop leaning in. And anyways, it's something you almost like can't stop watching it, which is like how we were having to make content these days. And your TikToks are the same way.
And then you're like looking in the mirror and you're like, am I the villain? I'm the one doing these things, which is, I watch a lot of Russell Brand, and he talks about the same thing. He did this whole video on the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard thing and how it's so crazy that we're following it, but he's following it by being able to talk to you about it and give commentary. But if you feel as though your commentary in the video that you're creating is healthy, is that a necessary evil? Is it the lesser of two evils? And these are things that we constantly have to grapple with in our lives. And I talk about that on the show often, about I wake up sometimes and I go, ugh, I do social media for a living. Like, I cannot believe I would look at this entity of social media and be like, this is evil. This is not right for us. It is lowering our attention spans. It is making us so that we need crazier and crazier content to see in order to cut through what is our boredom and our just soma minds, basically. And then I'm like, oh, this is what I do for a living. But if I'm doing it for a living and in injecting something good, hopefully, into social media, is that worth doing it? And maybe we can put a poll down below for you guys to answer that for yourselves. But that's a constant struggle for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's the same logic kind of applies as like people ask conservatives, why are you on TikTok? And mm-hmm. how can you justify being there? It's like, well, because it's owned by China and it's all this stuff. But it's like, well, we're there because that is the place where people's attention is. And mm-hmm. we're inserting the truth and our values and the things that we believe in into mm-hmm. that they're not going to get otherwise. And we're working to do so effectively. And yeah, I envy like my older brother, for example, just has three kids, family, house, Nashville, runs a business there and is just like so busy and so consumed with family life and going to birthday parties and spending time doing, you know, just
normal family stuff.
And he does not, and he's where he works out and he's like, I got a really healthy rhythm and he's really busy, but like he does not follow social media very much. I'll send him something on Instagram. If he even like logs in, it'll be like a week later, you know. Just very like rare, and I like envy that. I wish sometimes that we weren't so plugged into social media, but I think you and I struggle with that a lot because every day we have to be on top of the emerging stories, and it does get like a little soul crushing.
It does, yeah. And you look at it, and this is the argument that I constantly make, because yeah, like you said, a lot of conservatives come up and go, well, why are you on these platforms anyway? They're evil and they're this and this and that. But if you know, leave and you move away from them, the culture continues to move on them. And millions of young, impressionable people hop on them and are listening to these messages. So is the message that you're putting out worth being on that platform? A questionable thing. I'll often be on YouTube and sometimes be mindlessly watching videos. And then I'll get recommended like Russell Brand from his Awakening channel, and I'll watch it. And he's talking about how we are overstimulated, or we need to slow down a little bit and we need to turn things off. And I go, oh yeah, I can just do that. And I can go and do things and turn things off. And because that message was on the platform, I heard it. So it's this constant back and forth that you have to deal with when this is your life and this is your reality. If I could just snap my fingers like this and there would be no social media and nobody would have access to it and nobody would be doing it, great, I think. I think that is the better option, as opposed to, you know, the positives that people tout about social media being a global connection and constantly interconnected. Sometimes there are things you don't need to know. Sometimes there are people you don't need to be connected to. Sometimes the real, physical, tangible world and who you meet within your own communities and within your own travels is far more important, far more real, and far more connective than anything you can do on social media. So honestly, I'm in that boat of just snap the finger, make it go away. Are you?
I think it's impossible to say. It's like you can't choose what time you're born in, and the technology that's out there exists for better or for worse. It exists and it's going to. Like, would you go back in time and, you know, kill Tim Berners-Lee so he can't invent the internet? Right. Or Al Gore, I guess, since he was the one who invented the internet. But, you know, it's like, do we stop technology from happening? Like, all this stuff, they're kind of an inevitability of just progress. Mm-hmm. And I don't think halting that is a realistic way. So I think there is this sort of like, just like we have this, you know, sort of nostalgic fantasy of, oh, it'd be nice to live in the 1800s or the 1950s or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fun to think about, and it's fun to do the thought experiment of like, yeah, in a lot of ways, the world would be better off. But think about all the ways that the internet has accelerated how we distribute information and how fast you can do research and how fast new things can develop and all that. And like, would you trade that for it's more like, I don't know if you would trade it, but that's not really a realistic question to ask,
because
it's here for better or for worse. So it's really about how, given that this technology exists, how can I, as an individual, be smarter than the technology that's trying to manipulate me?
Yeah. How does it fit into my world? And we've talked about that with TikTok and things like that, about how they manipulate you with algorithms. And I can't imagine how many people are completely unaware of this and just being manipulated by it. But it is truly a reality. Steph Wilson put in a super chat. Thank you for your super chat. I've been asked asking this question to myself a lot lately. Staying informed with so many different viewpoints is exhausting and soul-crushing. Oh, boy, do I relate to you on that. It is a lot, and it is overwhelming, especially with the sheer scope of how much information you can have in today's day and age, how many things people are arguing about, how many things you're expected to have a viewpoint on. It's like you constantly have to be on your toes figuring out everything that's happening everywhere because we are so connected to each other, almost as if it's an expectation that if you're a human living in this time, you should know what's happening all the time. And it's an unbelievable reality that we live in now, but it is the reality that we live in now. So let's continue watching, see where we get.
It's like a motivator intended to help us focus and link up to our ability to feel pleasure. Think of that rush you get when you find a $20 bill in an old coat, or when you're talking to someone you like. That's dopamine. It's also released when we interact with others, even virtually. That's why social media comments and likes can feel so rewarding. Our brains are hitting us with a rush of dopamine. In the past, dopamine had a vital function for our survival. It kept us focused when looking for food and gave us a boost when we achieved our goals. It also helped to promote our community-building efforts. But there is so much triggering our brain pleasure centers these days. News, social media, life events, our brains can't keep up with all the stimulation. In the past, we had to hunt for our food, but now there's junk food everywhere giving you a similar feeling. The world was more closed off before, so meeting new and different people was always a unique experience.
And of course we get a YouTube ad. This is exactly right. So the world was so much more closed off before. You know, you were reading the news in your local paper, and that was what you knew about. And if there was a major thing happening around the world, you turn on the TV for that night, and you hear it on the nightly news. And now it's just everything, all the time, constantly connected. Something happens in Malaysia, and you have a notification on your phone to tell you right when it happens. That's the reality that we live in now. And you have to think that there's a natural progression of these things. So if we are all addicted to these dopamine hits that we are getting day in and day out, whether it be from social media, from the news, from junk food, from staying in at home and watching Netflix, eventually you get used to that constant hit of dopamine, and eventually it doesn't have the same effect anymore. Let's use social media for an example. If you make an Instagram post tomorrow and it gets 50 likes and that's consistently what you get, sure, that's great and that's the dopamine hit for the day, but could you get more? Could there be more? And soon, the threshold just goes up and up and up and up and up. And that's why I think we are seeing some of the craziest content on social media now. You got people like David Dobrik and Mr. Beast who are like giving away $1 million and Teslas and building theme parks in warehouses in Los Angeles, or, you know, people bully people on the internet. People make these really salacious, crazy videos. And it's because, you know, that dopamine hit does not work anymore. And you need more, and you need more validation, and you need more people seeing what you're doing, validating what you're doing, or at least just the attention and dopamine that comes with that. So eventually things are going to get crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier. And that's a lot of what we see in politics right now. A news story pops up and suddenly all the conservatives jump on it and they've got their talking points and they're trying to work out who has the most clever tweet. And then the Democrats do the same and the leftists do the same. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth. And eventually regular news stories are not interesting to you anymore. You need crazier news stories. You need to hear stuff that completely blows your mind or is something that you've never seen before, even though our daily lives are simply normal. And that is really scary to think about, because what craziness are we going to need in 5+ years if this is the track we're on now?
Yeah, it's scary. And it seems like, yeah, there's like the environment is just pre-charged with the hype machine on either side. And then if the right story comes, it's like you don't even have to read the details of the article. You know what both sides are going to say just about the headline. And it's like this dopamine cycle and the outrage cycle just makes it so that it doesn't encourage nuanced thinking. Kind of like we were talking at lunch today, like if you want to be like a person who has some depth and who thinks nuancedly and thinks for yourself about the issues of the day, the society is set against you. The internet is set against you. It's like a gravity that's pulling you toward just, you know, having a very low level of analysis and very shallow thinking and very just like following the latest outrage. And it's just trying to pull you in. Like you said, there's like every video, every headline is just going to appeal to that, you know, neurochemistry basically, and try to just get that to fire so they can get the click and monetize that and take your data. And it's just like this endless cycle of activity going on. And it, at no point are you incentivized to like slow down and think deeply and think critically about what you think, what your values are, what's going on in the world, and form an intelligent opinion on things, look deeply beneath the surface. Nothing is incentivizing you to do that. So you're like defying gravity, walking on water in a sense, every minute that you're like thinking for yourself.
Yeah, and it's these algorithms are just insane. It gives you exactly what you are and exactly what you like and nothing else. For instance, if I really liked fashion and I went on Instagram and I started liking a lot of fashion creators on the platform, that is all that I would get constantly. Funneled through and funneled through. Oh, you like this? Here's more. Here's more. Here's more. Here's more. I'm not going to give you anything that challenges this like or this affinity that you have for fashion on Instagram. I'm just going to give you more and more and more and more. And if that happens in the sense of politics or morality or on some of these social issues that we talk about, like you see on TikTok, where they go, oh, you're open to gender ideology? Here's more. Here's more. Here's more. Here's more. And I'm not going to give you anything that challenges it. In fact, we ban the people who challenge that. We're just going to funnel it through you. So essentially, what social media is a reflection of yourself that you just constantly get to look at. But it's not an evolving self. It's not a self that progresses. It is just exactly who you were at the time that you logged in with no evolution. And you are constantly plugged into that and incentivized to look at it more with the dopamine hits. And in fact, what social media does to you is it amplifies the worst parts of yourself. If you think about it, most people, especially young people, hop on social media and expects a degree of anonymity. They don't truly understand, I don't think, how much of their data, how much of what they like, how much of what they look at is being mined by these companies and corporations and then funneled back into them by people who want to make money from them as consumers. So you already think you're functioning with a little bit of anonymity. You know, my username is not my real name. Nobody's ever going to figure out my password. I'll look up all the weird stuff that I like to look at and all the crazy stuff that I like to look at. And social media goes, oh, she likes looking at this weird stuff. Let's give it back to her. Let's give her more and more and more and more. And then, like I said before, the threshold. Higher, 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 higher. That doesn't do it for me anymore because I watched that last month or I watched somebody do the same thing last month. So I need more. I need it to be weirder. I need it to be stranger in order to get the dopamine hit that I got last week. So what do you think is going to happen? Not only is social media going to be a reflection of yourself, but the very worst parts of your inner brain just constantly being funneled and strengthened and enhanced as you go on it every single day. So I can't imagine the disasters we're going to be in. And we know this to be true because people know, like right now, if I talk to all of you in your homes right now and I was like, can I please get the password to like your email or can you please log me into your computer and let me look through your internet history? You'd go, no, I think you'd literally jump off a building before you gave me your laptop to look at your internet history. Why? Because it's the trick that everybody gets into. It's not just to one individual. You show the worst parts of yourself to your laptop, to your phone, and then it gets funneled back to you. And again, you need more and more and more and more. And South Park has this brilliant episode about opening up everybody's internet history to the world, and these husbands and wives start looking up each other's internet history, and everybody goes insane and berserk, and they're so scared that their internet history got out to the world. And that's exactly what we would be like now. If there was a national announcement tomorrow saying all of you guys' internet history is open to the world, all you have to do is type in somebody's name and date of birth, boy, oh boy, would we be in a lot of trouble. But that's exactly what they want. They want you to feel like you have this air of anonymity, while really all these young bucks in Silicon Valley are taking all of your data, know exactly what you're like, they know exactly what you're looking up, and they're just feeding it back to you constantly. And we take it, and we still do it, and I still do it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, here we are on YouTube. Mike D said, Spencer gets a dopamine rush when we hit the like button.
Spencer really does. Spencer's in the chat right now. Thank you so much, Spence, for taking care of all the bots and making sure we get to like, what, 200, 300 likes. Yes, he does.
Yeah, while we're live on the stream. So while we're on it, hit that like button, guys. Smash that button and subscribe if you haven't so you can get notifications. Turn the notifications on, hit the bell. It's not enough to just subscribe. You got to hit the notification bell so you see when we drop new things. Because someone else also asked, Amala, do you ever reply to hate mails like ones that are super outrageous?
I will.
Wait, you literally just posted one today, is what I'm getting at.
I did.
If you had notifications on, you would have seen it.
Yeah. If you had notifications on, you would see my hate mail videos. I think I'm going to put out like once a week now. With the amount of hate mail that I get, I can up the frequency of making these episodes of hate mail. But if you go to my shorts on YouTube, you can see them. I don't directly respond to most of them typically because it's just not worth my time. I mainly respond to people who are supportive and who share the message and are going through their own thing that they like to share with me. The hate mail we just use for entertainment. Anyways, speaking of entertainment, let's get back to this video.
Social media, you always have millions sharing with you. And this wheel never stops. We can't even watch movies without checking our phones. So what happens when we get too much of it? Well, like any drug or chemical, we build up a resistance, a tolerance. Our modern world has made us addicts to stimulation, always looking for our next fix. And each fix is less powerful and harder to get. That's why it's so hard to do tasks that we don't find immediately entertaining. It doesn't matter if it's something that's important for your life, relationships, or career. If it's not giving you that hit right away, you'll get distracted by anything else that does.
And it's very true. Like, I hear a lot of people on the internet and they're criticizing people. You know, in California, we deal a lot with drug abuse and mental illness and people who are on the streets just completely addicted to drugs to where they're honestly a shell of a human being now. And a lot of people look at people like that and go, ew. That is completely disgusting. How could you allow your life to be overwhelmed by drug abuse? I'm gonna go, let me text you real quick and see how quickly you pick up your phone. See how quickly you pick up that phone. Let me see how long you stay on your phone every single day. And although it is different in the way that it affects the body, especially in its physical manifestation, you can look completely normal, as Taylor and I do, and be completely addicted to using your cell phone, as Taylor and I are in many ways. Drug users and people who are addicted to, say, I don't know, binge eating or eating food, it shows physically. So they function at a little disadvantage there, that their addiction does have a physical manifestation that people can see with the naked eye. We don't have that. And we can have this, you know, anonymity, as I said before, about what we are truly addicted to. So it's very easy to go and cast stones at people and go, oh my God, can't possibly believe how you could be addicted to something so insignificant. And then you get that text on your phone and you immediately have to be on it. So all I'm saying, and this is something that I've been guilty of too, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
And it's not that we don't consider these things important or even that we don't want to do them. Deep down, we know what matters and what doesn't, but it's hard to fight what's basically an addiction. It has nothing to do with being lazy. When you have so many things vying for your attention and you're chasing that rush, you start to become apathetic or even depressed. It's only natural. And in this day and age, everything is trying to get your attention. Recovering from addiction is hard, but doing it locked in a room that constantly gives you more and more of your drug? That's the definition of a Sisyphean task. Even worse, today's companies have taken wind of how our attention spans and reward centers work, and they've been using that against us.
Oof. And that's the real deal Holyfield part of this video. I want to extend a challenge to everybody watching this right now, and it's a challenge that I will partake in after we're done with the show and I head home today. Turn off your phone, don't go on your laptop or anything, walk around, get in your car, whatever, see how long it takes you to see an advertisement. Not an advertisement from a screen, but just an advertisement in general. Wherever it is you are right now in the world, walk around and see how long it takes for you to see an ad. They are everywhere. I swear, it's like you can't get 10 feet without seeing an advertisement that's aimed at you to buy something. Ridiculous. And this is what these companies do. So when you think, oh, no, I'm not falling for that. All I'm doing is watching a YouTube video. All I'm doing is on TikTok. All I'm doing is looking at my friends on Instagram and Facebook. Mm-mm-mm. They're taking control of exactly what you're seeing there. I could put out a video saying, you know, I'm against critical race theory, hashtag conservative, and you go like that video, and guess what you're going to get? Here's a pro-America koozie that's getting advertised for you, and here's this conservative newspaper. Do you want to subscribe? Because you like my video, and it had that tag on it, and they're controlling everything and seeing everything that you see. And one of the major perpetrators of a crime like this is Google. And Google, there's this brilliant documentary called The Creepy Line that you can go and watch about Google, about its creation. A company that used to have the slogan or the mission statement, don't be evil. And now look what they have evolved into. A pure and sheer entity of evil for the most part, other than the utility that it serves us in our daily lives. But if you go to the Google homepage, what do you guys see? You see the word Google, and what's around Google? Is there any advertisements or anything like that? No. It's a completely white page. It used to have, you know, the people, person, question, things, and then you have the little search bar. Why is that? Because Google, as a company, decided this is the way to get people to trust us. If they go to our homepage and they don't see advertisements on it, and they don't see that we're trying to sell them anything or make them a consumer, all they see is our title and the search bar. What does that make you feel? It makes you feel like, oh, this is just something that I'm simply using and I can search on, and it's not trying to sell me anything. And the second you go into searching, what is Google doing? Data mining. Taking everything that you are looking up, in fact, even listening to you often. I'll have conversations with my boyfriend or Taylor or Scott or any of our team here at PragerU, and I'll go and log into Google, search something completely different, and get an advertisement for what I was just talking about. And this has been tested as well. Yeah. So this company tries to trick you and go, look how trustworthy we are. We used our homepage. We didn't put any advertisement on it. We could have taken so much ad money, but we chose to keep it blank. Because you can trust us. And in fact, they are one of the worst perpetrators of stealing your information and trying to overstimulate you into being this obedient consumer. So it's just a crazy thing once you pull the curtain back and see the man behind it. And even so, even with having that knowledge in my brain, I know there's so much more that I'm completely unaware of when it comes to me being made into this overstimulated shell of a human being. So if that's what I'm aware of now, what am I unaware of? Because they'll allow you to know certain things and not others. So that was crazy to me to learn that.
Yeah, I have a crazy story about the internet listening to you. This past weekend, we went to the beach or pool or something, and mm-hmm. we were packing a beach bag. And I was like, oh, I broke my foot, so I can't play volleyball while I'm at the beach anymore. So I was like, I'll bring a book, which is hard for me to read given my overstimulated brain. But anyway, I grabbed a book off the shelf and did not say the name of the book out loud, did not acknowledge it in any way, just took the book off the shelf and put it in my bag, beach bag, and ended up not even reading the book at the beach because I was busy doing other things or whatever. Got home, and like the next day, got an advertisement. It's not a new book. It's not mm-hmm. brand new. It was it's called Story Brand by Donald Miller. It's like a book about marketing. But mm-hmm. anyways, I got an ad on my phone, on my Instagram story ads, of that specific book that I just took off the shelf. And it's like years old.
Yep.
I'm like, how in the world did they know? But like I have that, you know, usually I'm like, I can piece together like, okay, well, maybe I said it out loud or they saw it or whatever, but that one is just like haunting me
because like, you're like, I don't know what
I literally have no idea.
Yeah.
So the tentacles are everywhere.
Same experience. And I feel like once a week I'm having experiences like this. My boyfriend and I have been watching different things on Netflix. Like we watched Love on the Spectrum and we watched Peaky Blinders. We just started watching Peaky Blinders. And we watched Love on the Spectrum, and then I go on my TikTok because I am on TikTok. I make videos and I start scrolling through my For You page, and suddenly I'm seeing the same people from Love on the Spectrum on my TikTok, and it's getting recommended to me on my For You page. We started watching Peaky Blinders yesterday. I've not seen a damn episode of Peaky Blinders. But yesterday, and I go on my TikTok this morning to scroll through it, and on my For You page is character edits of the characters from Peaky Blinders. What is going on? And it feels, you really have to be on top of it. You really have to be aware of what is entering your brain and what is leaving your mouth, because it is constantly being surveilled. Like, we talk about surveillance and government surveillance as it's something that's going to happen way far in the future. Maybe it's happening now. It's happening now. And it's happening so much so that these companies are happy to make jokes about it. There is this Alexa ad that, Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett Johansson and her husband did, where they're talking about Alexa and how Alexa knows what you want before you even know what you want. Another slogan of Google's, of admins, they said, you know, we want the Google search engine to know what you're going to search before you even search it. And of course they've accomplished that, seemingly, because we're getting ads for stuff that we talk about to our significant others and to our peers and our friends and our coworkers. So that's where they are. And if they're aware of it enough to make a joke about it in a commercial, what are they really doing? What are they really doing? I know this is supposed to be about overstimulation, and now we're talking about like how corporations are stealing our brains, but
it's all connected.
It's all connected. They're linked. Oh.
Our dopamine dealers. The fight for your attention. The way our brains work has a lot to do with our current overstimulation problem, but it wouldn't be fair or accurate to put all the blame on ourselves. The truth is that companies realized a long time ago the best way to get us to consume their products was by finding ways to get our attention. Not only that, but making it so our brains associated using their products with euphoria. However, this practice really exploded in the last few decades with the advent of the internet and smartphones. Before, you might get your fix from eating junk food, watching a TV show, or going shopping, but you couldn't do any of those things all of the time, nor did you have access to them 24/7. But now you do. Smartphones and the internet opened up the floodgates for companies to fight for your attention every second of the day. And as the fight gets tougher, they get more and more aggressive. Mark Zuckerberg has built an empire around stimulating our brains and making our brains constantly fight more for that digital fix. We're not exaggerating here, okay? Social media apps like Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and many others have been designed for this very purpose. Sean Parker, former president of Facebook and creator of Napster, has talked at length about how Facebook was created with this idea of social feedback loops. That's how they keep you coming back and why it's so hard to focus on other things. Because our normal activities and goals are not designed entirely around rewarding the pleasure centers of our brains, but these apps, yeah, they are. And it's not even just social media anymore.
It's just like, watching videos like this make me want to delete every account that I own. They really, really do. They make me want to just turn off everything and be like, okay, y'all, I'm going to go live in the woods. I'm going to go start a homestead I'm not going to be here anymore.
It's every conservative girl's dream already. So.
It's every conservative girl's dream already. I'd be like, bye, guys. No more Unapologetic Live. I am moving into the woods and I'm not doing this anymore. And it's like we said before. They're completely aware of this. They're completely aware that whether or not you want this or you don't want it, you're addicted to it, and this is what they're going to serve you and give you. And I think it is, in large part, the onus is on us. Of course, there's going to be people who are constantly trying to manipulate you into doing things, into profiting them. So that's a reality. You can try as hard as you can to stop people like Mark Zuckerberg or the Jeff Bezos or the Bill Gates of the world, but those people are going to exist. And they're going to find their niche. They're going to find their market, and they're going to manipulate that market in whatever way they see fit once they reach a certain status and a certain power level. So it's really on us to make personal decisions in our lives that just directly affect us as individuals and make us better as individuals. Like, the change starts on the individual level and hopefully spreads to the community level, where people like Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos will exist, but they won't have a market. Unfortunately, do I have enough faith in our current society to think that there will be no more Mark Zuckerbergs or Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates? No. No, I don't. I think I'm just, yeah, I don't think we have it.
Yeah, and I guess the alternative is, you know, like a ministry of truth and a ministry, and then it's like, it sort of comes with the territory. Someone actually said that in the comments, that isn't this like a result of capitalism and free markets? Mm-hmm. And to a degree, yes, but again, that's why we enjoy so much of the technological innovation and things that we have is because of people are competing to develop technologies, and there's in marketing we call it the attention economy, that all these companies are competing for our attention because they can sell the space where your attention is focused to an advertiser who wants to get a message to you so they can spend. But that's not necessarily a new thing. Once upon a time, your attention was divided on newspapers and magazines and things like and you know, big movie screens and such, and now it's just in our pocket. But again, I think you're right that at the end of the day, no one is necessarily like opening up your eyeballs and forcing you to look at your phone every morning as soon as you get out of bed.
Right.
And the onus is on you as an individual. The deck is stacked against you more than it was in the past, that's for certain. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be smarter than the technology that's trying to manipulate you.
You do. Yeah. They're taking advantage of something that's already in you and a proclivity that you already have to do these things. You have to be aware of that. You have to take on the self-awareness and go, oh, I'm doing that bad thing again. I need to stop, even though there are these other entities that would like me to keep going. And as far as the capitalism argument, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And this, and it's something that I do go back and forth with. And when we talk about a free market, free is a very, very strong word when we're dealing with companies and corporations who are engaging in this type of business. And you have to think, this is uncharted territory.
Yep.
Uncharted territory. This is territory that we've walked into, what, in the past like 5-10 years? This is not anything we've ever experienced before, not only as like a country, but as a human civilization. We've never experienced this amount of interconnectivity before, and the people who are willing to manipulate that and use that for their own profit. Now, does capitalism have to adjust for that and start to draw lines in the sand for what is moral or immoral when it comes to business like this? I think so. I think we're going to start to have those discussions, especially when you think about how it sways the way our civilization works, what type of jobs people are doing, who people are voting for in elections, and being aware of the power that they have and their ability to manipulate people is going to usher in a new conversation that we have to discuss about the partnership of capitalism and technology. So I think in the coming decades, there's going to be plenty of legislative discussions about what these companies are able to do, specifically, I think, when it comes to how much information they are allowed to take from you and whether or not they're able to sell that information to other entities, because clearly that's what they're doing. So I'm curious to see if we stop the train before, you know, it goes off the cliff, or, you know, if we're just hanging over a little bit, or if we just completely go off the cliff without recognizing that this is a problem that we're going to see not only now, but in the future. Let's keep going on this video, or I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. This is overcoming the barrage. I imagine we're going to get some solutions, or at least behavioral things that we can do to mitigate this problem.
Overcoming the barrage. Now, at this point in the video, you might be feeling a little overwhelmed yourself. When there's entire systems designed around getting your attention and stimulating you, how can you get past that? But we wouldn't have made this video just to present a problem, right? We're here to give you some solutions. And there are things you can do to fight all of the overstimulation in your life. Number one, take steps to disconnect from social media. A large part of what robs us of our attention and our focus is social media. So your first step regaining your power over your life is controlling your social media usage. Trying to quit cold turkey will probably be too much for anyone. As we said, this constant overstimulation has kind of made us addicts. So instead, work your way back slowly. Start by turning off notifications. These little blips are sometimes the most distracting things that can occur. Even if a notification only pops up for a few seconds, that's enough to break your focus, and regaining your focus once you're distracted can be incredibly hard. It's better to set a specific period of time during the day to check your emails or social media, maybe during lunch or at the end of your day.
It's totally true. Sometimes I will be just living my own life normal in the real actual world, and I'll get a notification that absolutely means nothing. But because I looked at it, I'm opening the app and now I'm looking through other stuff that I don't need to be looking at. And it gives you a sense of comfort. This is what I know. This is what I have. I can constantly see something new, hear somebody new talk to me. I can see the faces that I see on social media every day. It is a comforting little blanket that you can have at any single part of the day. But what do we do with kids that like to drag around their blankets to school and to the grocery store and to the park, and they carry it until they're like 13 years old? We go, okay, it's time to get rid of the blanket, even though it makes you a little bit uncomfortable. And we are so used to comfort now in our lives that it's really difficult to go, I'm gonna put this away and I'm gonna go for a walk, completely unconnected, and just take in what is real and natural outside of my cell phone. And it's difficult. But if anything, something that I need to learn in my daily life is to take on those uncomfortable moments. Make yourself uncomfortable, because that's where you grow. That's where you learn things about yourself. That's where you learn your boundaries, where your comfort zone is. You have to give yourself uncomfortable challenges in order to grow as a human being. And sometimes you'll take on an uncomfortable challenge, and by the end of it, you don't feel good. You don't feel triumphant. You maybe feel sad. You feel angry. You feel frustrated. But did you learn something about yourself? Yeah, you did. Did you learn maybe a weakness that you have that you need to face later and continue to make yourself uncomfortable with? Absolutely you did. And we do that so often with other things in our lives. I'm sure a lot of us have jobs now that when we started them, we were not the most comfortable doing them. I was just talking to my boss and Taylor about how when I started this job, if you go back to my old PragerU videos that I started when I was just getting started here, I look so nervous, a little uncomfortable. I wasn't comfortable being in front of the camera whatsoever. And now I'm like, when are we going live? Is it 3 o'clock yet? Let's do it. let's turn on the camera. Let's get things going. Let's talk to people. And it's because I made a conscious effort to go, this makes me uncomfortable, but I'm going to face it. Because it's worth it, whether or not this works out for me and I become successful doing this or I fail at it. At least I tried. I learned something about myself. I faced those weaknesses and I found what my strengths are in that particular field. So why not do that with things like social media? Why not do that with things like Netflix? Why not do that with things like junk food and the things that we are overstimulated with? Because regardless, we will continue to have our little vices and the things, our little comfort zones that we constantly want to stay in those little bubbles. But the more that you pop those and the more that you find them and alleviate yourselves from them, the better you're going to be as a human being. You'll be so well-rounded.
That's such a good point. And I think it's interesting that, like, if you think about back in the day, people didn't have this little device in their pocket that they could, like, look at to avoid eye contact with someone in the elevator or to in social situations. As soon as the conversation hits a lull, well, let me just check my phone. And it's like it's a cop out. And back then you just had to fill that space and figure out a way to develop social skills and interact with people. And what do we see right now with Gen Z? Some of the worst social skills and the highest levels of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And where do you think that's coming from? Is just you never have to negotiate your personality and your identity with the real world. You just go to back to TikTok and then they can tell you to identify as this and that's your pronouns, and you don't have to worry about being an independent thinking person, and then you don't have to develop real social skills and talk to people. You can just go on Discord and go online, and it's like a way to circumvent. And but it, like you're saying, it short sells yourself of being a stronger person who can stand on your own two feet in conversation, who can competently interact with people, who can speak and think your thoughts. Well, first, think your thoughts, have thoughts, have original thoughts and perspectives, and have a more than a modicum of depth to the way that you view the world, and then be able to articulate that to other people and just be a functioning human. And that's such a, with help, compare that with like helicopter parenting, and you just can see why our society right now, the younger generation, it's an uphill battle. Again, it's kind of like they were saying before. It's just like the gravity of our culture right now, and all this tech is like pulling you down toward just being on that soma all the time and not having to grow up.
Yeah, absolutely. You could literally be born today in the United States and just be on a phone your entire life and never see another human, and you would be able to go to school and college and go to work and lead your entire life. You could do what I do for a living and never see another human being in your life. And that blows my mind. And of course, it is in ways a sign of major progress. We don't want to say that all technology is bad or that development of this sort of tech is a horrible thing. No, it's innovating. It's helping a lot of people in doing so. But we have to acknowledge what are the weak points of this development. We have a super chat from Savrix who says, it is up to the individual to detect and determine what is rogue information and genuine knowledge. Rogue information can profane the intellect. Absolutely true. And if you just constantly keep yourself in this bubble of being fed exactly what it is you like or what you're comfortable with, which is what social media is, you will have the discernment of a goldfish, maybe even worse than a goldfish. And that should be feared, and it should be a position, a situation that we don't want to be in ourselves. Yet so many people are comfortable being in that situation and acknowledge that as the reality and continue to do it, me being one of them in many ways. So constantly, like we did with the last one, what was the last one? Learn to not be scared of what other people think of you and to be yourself. Find out who yourself is and be true and genuine to that, because that is truly the only way to live. If you live any other way, you're living somebody else's life, or at least a depiction of somebody else's life. And in today's episode, this lesson is to make yourself uncomfortable, step away from things that are just constantly stimulating you in a way that just keeps you blind and blurred to what is the real world around you. And really, like I said, seek out uncomfortability. The next time you want to go on social media and scroll on TikTok for 2 hours, pick up a book or go on a walk or call your mama or your daddy, because I'm sure they would love to hear from you. Do things that you might not do on a daily basis, and soon they will become habits rather than the habit of picking up your phone and looking at random people who you do not know day in and day out.
Yeah, I mean, you just made me think of one other story. So I was picking on Gen Z a second ago, but like this is something I struggle with too. Mm-hmm. And my wife makes fun of me because like I'll even like when I go in the shower play a sports podcast or something while I'm mm-hmm. like showering because my brain doesn't like that like
the
empty space and silence. Yeah. But the other day, it was this past weekend. I was like, okay. I got my phone out to take with me a shower. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to. And just sat with the silence a little bit. And in that time, I don't know, because I think like it's such a like daily routine type thing. You're mm-hmm. the rest of your body goes into autopilot and you can actually have like really deep shower thoughts. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
But anyways, I had like an idea and it sparked something. And it was basically my one of my grandfathers passed away last week and my other grandfather had passed away a year earlier, and there was like a heavy contrast between their two lives and their mm-hmm. way that they managed their two families. And I just got this concept popped in my head, like a tale of two grandfathers, let me write this.
Yeah.
And so I went and like put away the podcast and everything and went and sat this and wrote this thing, and it was like a very like cathartic thing of like healing and processing mm-hmm. a lot of the loss of my grandfather. And just it ended up, I shared it with my parents and they mm-hmm. thought it was like a beautiful thing that helped them. And it was like, that never would have happened. And not that it was like this, magnum opus or anything, but not that helped me process what I was going through. It helped other people and it made me more deep. And if I never, like what social media does and staying plugged into the system is like, how much is buried beneath that we're just not processing, not thinking about, not reflecting on, not integrating, and that we're just like shoving down.
Brilliant
and
point.
Yeah, so just like slowing down and allowing those, because I think you made a good point. It's like, it's going to read a book or something, like if your brain kicks in, it's like, that is such a big, arduous undertaking to mm-hmm. read a book or write a blog or something like that, when if you can train yourself to overcome that initial resistance that comes in, it's like, no, but I want dopamine now, some of the most rewarding things happen. And like you do just can enjoy a great piece of literature and retrain yourself to like have depth and have substance, and you'll be a better, deeper, stronger person with deeper roots, intellectually, morally, spiritually, when you can train yourself to kind of slow down.
And I think that's a brilliant way to reframe it, because a lot of people will hear it and go, oh, I don't want to be uncomfortable. Uncomfortable sounds just like a really negative word. But when you're doing these things and you are engaging in this overstimulation, just think to yourself, what am I missing right now? What could I possibly be missing that could be fulfilling, maybe a trauma that needs resolving, or what thoughts am I tamping down in my brain that maybe nobody else is having, or maybe everybody else is having, but you haven't gone through it and went through the process yourself. And just think about all these brilliant, beautiful moments in this short life that we have that you are missing by essentially watching other people lead their lives. And that's where you have to have that discernment, like I said. It's not to say that social media is completely invaluable. I wouldn't be doing things like this if I thought it was completely invaluable. You have to decide, who are the people that I think are worth listening to? And who are the people that, I don't need to spend 30 minutes listening to their take on this, or watching them go to the beach with their family. It's gone as far as to where we'll listen to something. Like, let's say we'll watch a movie. There's a whole market of people on YouTube whose job is nothing more than reacting to movies. And people watch them get the dopamine hit of reacting to movies. So we are in this inception of just watching other people lead their lives and getting the dopamine hit from that, which is unbelievable. And again, something that I have engaged in. Sometimes I'll hear a song and be like, oh, I wonder how other people reacted to this song. I would love to look up. And I'll look up other people reacted to the song I just heard. It's so crazy to me. And you do it without even thinking. So imagine all these subconscious thoughts or things that you could be evaluating and looking through, or activities that you could be doing, ways you could be bettering yourself. And instead, you are wasting your time. That's really, I think that sums up today's episode for the most part. I hope you don't feel like you've wasted your time with me watching this right now. Mm. I hope to be my Russell Brand to where it cuts through the noise a little bit and you hear a message that is needed. And hopefully when you leave this podcast today, you go, you know what? That's all the phone that I maybe needed for today. Or that's the last time I'm going to pick this up for the sake of sheer pleasure. And the next time I pick this up, it'll be to learn something, to better myself, to do my job, or to bring something into my life that I did not have before. And that's what we're constantly trying to do for you guys.
And if you didn't like this video of Amala reacting to another video, you can make your own video reacting to Amala's reaction of this video. And then we might react to that if it's good enough. So then we'll have like four layers deep of reaction and we'll see how deep this can go.
Yeah. That is exactly right. Welcome to the inception of video reactions. I hope you guys enjoyed. I didn't even realize that I was reacting to a video reacting to it.
We were. Yeah. We're calling out the people who do reaction stuff. Well,
and
on a
we
podcast
do reaction or, stuff. Yeah. Anyways, guys, the rabbit hole is never ending and we're all just trying to find our place in it. So comment down below. How do you feel? Are you guys overstimulated? Have you fixed this in your own life? Have you done something that has made you uncomfortable? Have you found a way to use social media less? I envy people who I meet who are like, I'm not even on social media. I don't even know what you're talking about when you're talking about these news stories and people arguing and this and that. I just got back from the park with my kids and now we're going to go eat dinner. I envy that. And I think that is a lot of what my future is going to look like. So comment down below. Where are you at in your stage of overstimulation? You in it? You passed it? You never got there? Let me know. And like, subscribe, click the notification bell. Although you might not need the notifications. Just check in with me when you want to check in with me. And I'm sure there will be a piece of content up for you, for your eyes and for your ears. Anything else, Taylor?
I think you've got it all covered. Tune in tomorrow.
We'll see you guys tomorrow, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Bye, guys.